Okay, tonight I'd like to pick up where we left off in 2 Kings. We left off in chapter 17. It's where we left off. And if you recall, last week when we were reading basically about one of the worst kings that the southern kingdom had. That was King Ahaz. He was a notoriously wicked man. He led the southern nation into all kinds of idolatry and immorality and ungodliness. And as a result of that, I mean, God just kept dealing with the southern kingdom because of his wickedness, and he kept bringing one judgment after another up on the southern kingdom. And then the guy dies, and incredibly, he ends up having one of the most godly kings that Israel had ever had. I mean, he ranked it right up there along with David. Because before we get into reading this chapter 17, just back up to the last two verses of chapter 16, because that kind of leads into what we're going to be dealing with tonight. But the last two verses of chapter 16 of 2 Kings, it says, Now the rest of the acts of Ahaz, which he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? So Ahaz slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David, and his son Hezekiah reigned in his place. And then beginning with chapter 17, it says, In the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, Hoshea, the son of Elah, became king over Israel and Samaria and reigned 9 years. Now I want you to keep something in mind. It's basically telling us that when this notoriously wicked king Ahaz, when he was reigning, during his reign, the last king of the northern tribes, Hoshea, began to reign. And the northern kingdom is on its way out because of their wickedness, because they've forsaken God, because of their idolatry. And God warned them over and over and over and over again through the prophets over and over again that if they didn't change their ways, God was going to, you know, just boot them out of the land. And I'm telling you, when you read this, like I said, you can go through Kings, you can go through Chronicles, you can go through some of these historical books and feel like it's a lot of useless information, it's a lot of boring, bland, dry history. But I'm telling you, this is very instructive, because I see the United States in this so clearly in terms of what's going to happen to us in terms of a judgment. Because look what God is doing. He's sending all kinds of judgments against this nation. You know, not out of any kind of vindictiveness. He's doing it to try to, in his great mercy, try to get our attention. That's what he did with the northern tribe, and the northern tribe would not listen to him. Regardless of what God would do, he could not get these people to turn. So now we're going to read about the last king before God lowers the boom. And I think it's pretty instructive, because look at that verse 1 again in 17. In the 12th year of Ahaz, the king of Judah, Hoshea, the son of Elah, became king over Israel and Samaria, and he reigned 9 years. So we're dealing with the last 9 years of the northern kingdom here. Verse 2, he says, He did evil in the sight of the Lord, only not as the kings of Israel who were before him. Shalmaneser, the king of Assyria, came up against him, and Hoshea became his servant and paid him tribute. But the king of Assyria found conspiracy in Hoshea, who had sent messengers to So, king of Egypt, and he had offered no tribute to the king of Assyria, as he had done year by year. So the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. Then the king of Assyria invaded the whole land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years. In the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria captured Samaria and carried Israel away into exile into Assyria and settled them in Hala and Harbor, on the river Gozan, in the cities of the Medes. Now, it's kind of almost anticlimactic in terms of the way it describes their demise. I mean, it's the end of them. You know, I forget where I read this. I don't know. Maybe it was in the Rise and the Fall of Nations. Or I only wrote this down, you know, by memory. Some of these things may be wrong. But, you know, there's basically a pattern that you can see with nations, and as far as their rise and their fall is concerned. And what's brought out is that a nation will go, or people will go from bondage and slavery to prayer and repentance, and they'll go from prayer and repentance to moral strength and great courage, and they'll go from moral strength and great courage to conflict and revolution or revolt, and they'll go from conflict and revolt to peace and freedom, and from peace and freedom to strength and prosperity, and from strength and prosperity to apathy and indifference, and from apathy and indifference to moral decline and wickedness, and from moral decline and wickedness back to bondage and slavery. So you tell me where we're at right now. As a nation, we are definitely in a moral decline and wickedness, just a hair's breadth away from becoming enslaved again by our enemies and by others. But you know what? Before we pick up with this verse 7, which we, you know, where we left off in 2 Kings, you don't have to turn there, but just listen to Chronicles, in 2 Chronicles chapter 30, and I'll just read a few verses from it. But in chapter 30, you have Hezekiah that became the king of the southern kingdom. All right. And Hezekiah was a very godly man, and he sent messengers throughout the northern kingdom before they were completely destroyed. They were suffering all kinds of things, but he said to them, hey, come back down here and worship the Lord. And look what these people said to him. In chapter 30 of 2 Chronicles, it said, now Hezekiah sent to all of Israel and Judah and wrote letters to also to Ephraim and to Manasseh that they should come to the house of the Lord at Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover of the Lord, the God of Israel. For the king and his princes and all the assembly in Jerusalem had decided to celebrate the Passover in the second month. Since they could not celebrate it at the time because the priests had not consecrated themselves in sufficient numbers, nor had the people been gathered to Jerusalem. Thus, the thing was right in the sight of the king and all of the assembly. So they established a decree, and they circulated a proclamation throughout all of Israel, to Beersheba, even to Dan, that they should come to celebrate the Passover of the Lord, God of Israel, at Jerusalem, for they had not celebrated in great numbers as it was prescribed. So anyway, it says here, the couriers went throughout all of Israel and Judah with the letters from the hand of the king and his princesses, even according to the command of the king, saying, O sons of Israel, return to the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, and that he may return to those who have escaped and are left from the hand of the king of Assyria. So this is while they're going through this judgment. They're experiencing this exile and this oppression and all these problems. And here God is giving them another chance through this king who is saying, let's set aside our differences. Let's set aside all of our political wrangling and come down here. Let's worship the Lord together. But look what happens here. It says, do not be like your fathers or your brothers who were unfaithful to the Lord of God of their fathers, so that he made them a horror, as you see. Now, do not stiffen your neck like your fathers, but yield to the Lord and enter his sanctuary, which he has consecrated forever, and serve the Lord your God, that his burning anger may turn away from you. For if you return to the Lord, your brothers and your sons will find compassion before those who led them captive and will return to this land. For the Lord your God is gracious and compassionate and will not turn his face away from you if you return to him. Now listen to this. So the couriers passed from city to city through the country of Ephraim and Manasseh and as far as Zebulun, but they laughed them to scorn and mocked them. Isn't it amazing? They're right smack in the middle of all of this judgment. They're being carried away, their sons and their daughters, and now still God is making an appeal through this godly king in the south, saying, hey man, come down here and worship God, and God will be merciful to us, and maybe your children will be brought back to you. And what do? The messengers are scorned and mocked and laughed at. I mean, it says a lot to me. It really does. It says, nevertheless, some men of Asher, Manasseh, and Zebulun humbled themselves and came to Jerusalem. And the hand of God was also upon Judah to give them one heart to do what the king and the princes commanded the word of the Lord. So this is just a little bit of insight as how hardened these people became. Look at some of the judgments that we're experiencing today. Look at, for example, you know, STDs, sexually transmitted diseases, AIDS and HIV. It's one disease that we could wipe out by just changing our behavior, but nobody can dare say that, you see. So look at right in the middle of this judgment. Look at the, you know, there are people coming down with all kinds of sexually transmitted diseases, but are they listening to God? It's a warning from God. But just like these people of old, they just mock these couriers, these messengers, to scorn. Just like anybody today who will stand up and say, you know what our problem is? Our problem isn't that we don't have enough money to throw at everything. This is our problem, everybody. Go back to Chronicles where it says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, I will heal your land. And that's the only way this land is going to be healed. The only way. Now, even the ones who claim to be a Christian, they will never say that. Why? Even though that's God's own... Yeah, they'll be laughed to scorn. So look what these people... And even in the middle of their judgment, you can see, you know, that they had a godly king down there, Hezekiah, who's making an appeal to all these people up there who are experiencing all kinds of problems in the midst of their judgment. You know, they're mocking God's messengers, the king's couriers, who are trying to get these people to come back to God. So what does that tell you about human nature? Anyway, look at that verse 7 and back to 2 Kings chapter 17. It says, now this came about because the sons of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, who had brought them up from the land of Egypt under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and they had feared other gods. And they walked in the customs of the nations whom the Lord had driven out before the sons of Israel, and in the customs of the kings of Israel which they had introduced. Now, you know, look at this nation. Are we walking in the customs of the ungodly today? So often you can see it right in the church. And in verse 9 it says, the sons of Israel did things secretly which were not right against the Lord their God. Moreover, they built for themselves high places in their towns, from watchtowers to fortified city. You know, look what they're doing. They did things secretly that were not right against the Lord. I mean, this country's, you know, doing all kinds of things against God, right? But he says this, moreover, they built themselves high places. Again, you know, I don't want to beat this to death, but isn't it amazing when we're going through this 1 and 2 Kings, how often God is mentioning these high places? And again, I have to refer back to Deuteronomy chapter 12, where God gave them specific instructions, saying, look, when you get into your land that I'm going to give you, there's only one place that I want you to offer sacrifice, the place that I choose. I don't want you offering sacrifices on every hill and every mountain, under every green tree, only the place I tell you. Because God knew it would only end up being a perversion, because that's what the Canaanites would always do. But I think that God mentions these high places over and over and over again because the people claim to believe in the God of heaven. But again, you know, you go back to Galatians. What does Paul tell us in Galatians? He says, in Galatians chapter 1, he says, I am amazed that you are so quickly deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel, which is really not another, only there are some who are disturbing you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to that which we have preached to you, he is to be accursed. As we have said before, so I say again, now if any man is preaching to you a gospel contrary to what you have received, he is to be accursed. And then what are we told in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, where Paul says, I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your mind should be led astray from the simplicity and the purity and the devotion to Christ. For if one comes and preaches another Jesus whom we have not preached, or you receive a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted, you bear this beautifully. In other words, it's another Christ, it's another Jesus, it's another gospel. And, you know, this is kind of an older magazine. It's not that old, a few years old, but I remember just on the newsstand. It was a Newsweek magazine called Spirituality in America. And, you know, sure enough, it was exactly what I thought it was going to say in this thing. It talks about how people, so many people, the overwhelming majority of people in this country claim to be spiritual, claim to believe in God, but they have a different God, a different Jesus, a different gospel. You know, everybody's basically doing what's right in their own eyes. That's why God had such an abhorrence in regards to these high places, because people just wanted to worship God in their own way. And that's not going to get us over. Paul warned us about it in Corinthians, and he warned us about it in Galatians. He says, man, if somebody comes along and preaches to you a different gospel, a different Jesus, man, I don't care if it's an angel from heaven. Paul says, let him be accursed. And those are heavy words, aren't they? We got all kinds of different people coming out of the woodwork today that are preaching a different gospel, a different Jesus, with a different spirit. But you know what? That was basically foretold, wasn't it? I mean, Paul told us in Timothy that that's what would happen to us. He said in Timothy chapter 4, he says, but the Spirit explicitly says that in the latter times some will fall away from the faith, paying attention to deceitful spirits and the doctrines of demons. And then in 2 Timothy chapter 4, it says, I solemnly charge you in the presence of God and of Christ Jesus, who is to judge the living and the dead, and by his appearing in his kingdom, to preach the word, to be ready in season and out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with great patience and instruction. Listen to this. For or because a time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance with their own desires, and will turn away their ears from the truth, and will turn aside to myths. That's a fulfillment. We're just living in that day right now, where people are basically saying, hey man, don't tell me what I need to hear. Tell me what I want to hear. That, to me, I'm going to incur a much stricter judgment, because that's what it says in James. It says, don't all of you become teachers, brethren, because as a teacher, you are going to have a lot to account for. And the last thing I want to do is stand before God and have him say, you know what, you've misled people. You know what I'm saying? I would rather spend my life as a gross, flagrant, unrepentant sinner and just doing my thing and just going along that road. I would rather stand before God on Judgment Day like that than stand before God on Judgment Day having used this Bible to mislead people, to tickle their ears, to tell them what they want to hear. And yet, this is what's happening all over the turf today. People are just flocking to anybody and everybody who will tell them what they want to hear, and rather than what they should hear. And this is you can see the same thing happened centuries ago, thousands of years ago. These people would, you know, did the same thing. They sacrificed on these high places. In other words, they worshiped God the way that suited them best, that made God more palatable to them. They wanted to, you know, bring God down to their level. Back in Genesis, it says God made man in his image and likeness. But ever since then, I mean, man has been trying to bring God down and make God in our own image and likeness, how we want him to be. Anyway, he says this, in that verse 10, he says, they set for themselves sacred pillars and asherims on every high hill and under every green tree. This is another reason why they were brought this judgment. We're not given any specific details as far as what these sacred pillars were. But, you know, when we went through 2 Samuel, and 2 Samuel 18, we read about Absalom. Absalom was a vain guy who rebelled against David, his father. But this is what it says about Absalom. It says, now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's valley. For he said, I have no son to preserve my name. So he named the pillar after his own name. And it is called Absalom's Monument to this day. Now, I get this impression that what people would do as far as these sacred pillars were concerned, they set up these pillars, and it was supposed to be kind of reminders to people of their own specific gods. And they would burn incense to these pillars, these sacred pillars, all right? Well, we have sacred pillars today, but it's not some kind of totem pole that we've set up that we bow down to and do homage to. But what are our sacred pillars today? The sacred pillars are things that, you know what, you cannot touch. They're sacred. These are sacred cows. You know what you can't touch today? You can't touch homosexuality, you can't touch evolution, you can't touch abortion, you can't touch pornography. In other words, what I mean by touch, I mean this. These are off limits. These are off limits. In other words, evolution has become a sacred cow. And so many people, even in the church, are kissing the sacred cow's rear end. And I won't do it. I just refuse to do it. I say, you can kiss my rear end. I'm not doing it. I'm not bowing down to this sacred pillar that you've set up and saying, you know what, we've all just evolved from some primeval slop and slime and soup, and there's no rhyme or reason or purpose to our existence. That's all bunk. And they say, well, yeah, God did it all, but he did it over billions and billions of years because science proves it. It's impossible that God created the world in 6 days, because all you need to do is look out there in the heavens and you see the farthest stars are like 15 billion light years away. It'll take 15 billion years for that light to reach us. But you know what's interesting? What did God say at first? He says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, but he said, let there be light. And then it says God separated the light from the darkness. And you know what? That was the first day. It wasn't until the fourth day that God said he created the light bearers, the sun and the moon and the stars. So in other words, God had, you know, all he did was separate that light. But we say, well, it can't possibly have happened. But I'm just simply saying, what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with a God who is the one who set all of these physical limitations in motion. You know what I'm saying? He's above and beyond it. He can do anything he wants. But these people feel like, hey, man, you've got to bow down to this sacred cow. And if you don't kiss its rear end, then you're stupid. You're ignorant. You're a fool. You're a buffoon. And, you know, you've been called everything. And I'm saying, I'm not going to do it. You know, they have dug from here to China and back and have not found one transitional fossil, not one.
Yeah, you're right. It's a spiritual battle because that's why there's so much contention for evangelical Christians, because that's what stands in the way of them, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why there's such a division. And,
right.
You know, and that's what God said would happen in the end days, that division would be more clear,
right.
Clearly divided.
Yeah, and it's going to get worse and worse. It is. And it's, by the time it's all over and done, there's going to be nobody sitting on a fence. Nobody. Okay? And that verse 10 says, for they set up for themselves sacred pillars and ashram. An ashram was a female deity that they'd worship, this goddess of fertility. And in a lot of times there are pagan worship ceremonies, you know, they'd have all kinds of sexual activity and copulation because they felt like this would bring blessings upon their crops and make them fertile and make their wives fertile and their flocks and their herds. I mean, they just felt like it was going to be prosper them. Well, our ashram today is the goddess of sex, like I've said many times. I mean, I don't care what's a commercial you watch on TV, you know, and I don't care if they're selling 50 pounds of steer manure, there's a half-naked lady on top of it. You know, why? Because sex sells, right? This is our ashram today. And it says an ashram on every high hill and under every green tree. I mean, everywhere you turn, you see this, right? Everywhere you turn, you see it.
Don't you? Everywhere you turn. You know, I work in a grocery store. I see it every day. It's staring me in the face. Every single magazine, everything, every advertisement, everything. Turn on the TV. See if you can go 20 seconds without seeing it. And verse 11 says, "And there they burned incense on all the high places as the nations did, which the Lord had carried away into exile before them, and they did evil, provoking the Lord." You know, God told these people very plainly. He says, you know, when you get into that land that I'm going to give you, when you get into that land, He says, if you start acting like those people, I'm going to throw you out on your ear just like them. You know, I've had people say, well, God, the Old Testament, he's nothing but a big bully because he took this land that belonged to these people and they worked very hard for their houses and their crops and their fields and everything else. And he had them killed and run out and he brings his own people in. What kind of God is this? God hasn't changed. He's just doing the exact same thing to these people who started acting like them. Exact same thing. That's what he's saying here. They went in exile before them, provoked them to anger. To me, this is more up to date than tomorrow's newspaper because it has a lot to say to us. We're not going to get away with our sins. We're not going to get away with it. In verse 12, it says, "They served idols, and concerning which the Lord said to them, 'You shall not do this thing.' Yet the Lord warned Israel and Judah through his prophets and every seer, saying, 'Turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments, my statutes, according to all the law which I commanded your fathers and which I sent to you through my servants the prophets.'" Okay, stand up today and say, you know what? We need to turn from our evil ways. People are going to look at you like, what are you talking about? What evil ways? The only evil people I know is a pedophile. Everybody else is good, is a good person. You know what I'm saying? Well, we're a country that's swimming in evil. And he says here in verse 2014, he says, "However, they did not listen, but stiffened their neck like their fathers who did not believe in the Lord their God." Is this what we do today? Every time God sends a judgment, they don't listen. Every time that God sends somebody, you know, I mean, I'm the biggest butt end of people's jokes at my store. I mean, I just laugh it off as it becomes almost hilarious. Even the customers make a mockery of me. You know, they do it all in fun, but I'm telling you, it's people stiffening their neck. They won't listen. When somebody's trying to tell them, hey, you know what? We really got to take God serious in our life. And verse 15 says, "And they rejected his statutes and his covenants which he made with their fathers and his warnings which he warned them, and they followed vanity and became vain." Is that what we're doing today? Following vanity and becoming vain? That's what Solomon said. He took a good, hard, cold look at life. He says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. It's all striving for nothing. He says, the eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. You know, I mean, if we don't put our priorities right, if we don't have them right, if we don't have God first in our life, then everything is vanity. We can pile up all the money we possibly can, but you know what? It's all vanity. Look at Howard Hughes. He had over $1 billion. And who got it in the end? I mean, the guy went insane. You know? We talk about vanity. And then who got it in the end? The lawyers gobbled it up like a bunch of vultures. I mean, we could have done so much with it. But again, he says they followed and became vain. You know, look at some of these magazines. Oh, look at almost all. Look at these muscle magazines. You look at some of these guys; they're so puffed up. I mean, they got veins popping out of everything. And they've just got these muscles rippling all over in a place. And you're like, well, that looks good, but you know what? It's pretty vain, you know, because your body's your god, and it's going to look like a corpse real soon, and it's going to be giving off all kinds of aroma. That's the plain truth, isn't it? I mean, but look, they don't see it, so it's vain, right? It says, they follow vanity, become vain, and went after nations which surrounded them, concerning which the Lord had commanded them not to do like them. They forsook all the commandments of the Lord their God, and made for themselves molten images, even two calves, and made an Asherah, and worshipped all the host of heaven, and served Baal. You know, it's, like I said, they made two calves, one in Dan and one in Bethel, but they said, these are the gods of heaven. These are the ones that brought us out of Egypt. So what was it? In the Old Testament, it was another gospel. It was another Jesus. It was another spirit, right? See what I'm saying? It wasn't the God of heaven, but they claimed it was the God of heaven. And then look what it says here. They worship all the host of heaven. What does that mean?
Angels.
The host of heaven.
Constellation.
Yeah. You know, this is an old magazine, but, you know, it was an old Life magazine that I kept around, but I thought it was kind of interesting. It says, why so many of us are now believing the stars reflect the soul, astrology rising. And it just, you know, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but here's an interesting, some things it says here. It turns out astrology is experiencing its biggest boom in 400 years. According to a recent poll, just 20% of Americans are flat out non-believers. That's in astrology. 48% say astrology is probably or definitely valid. The first newspaper horoscopes appeared in the 30s. Now they run in the vast majority of dailies. 20 years ago, there were estimated 1,000 professional astrologers in the United States. Today, there are something like 5,000. Okay, but like I said, this is an old this magazine is about 11 years old, so there's a lot more than that today. And it just goes on to say, time for reckoning with destiny, one of those anxious conjunctures when soothsayers of all sorts have a field day. It's talking about, you know, the new millennium. It says, and though its roots stretch back to Babylon, astrology is a form of soothsaying suited for our science-drenched era. And like I said, there's a whole article on this, all right? But isn't this revealing? And what does the Bible say? It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't rely upon your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path. But people looked at a horoscope. For what? They looked to the stars for their guidance and direction. Thousands of years have come and gone. Look, nothing's changed because human nature hasn't changed. He says this, they worship the host of heaven, they serve Baal. Well, what did Jesus Christ say? He said in Luke, he said in Matthew, you cannot serve two masters. No man can serve two masters. You're either going to love one or hate the other, or cleave to one or despise the other. He said, no man can serve God and what? Mammon. Which is what? Money. How many people put money before God? People don't analyze it that way. People say, well, you know, I believe in God and He's important in my life. But I say, well, do you go to church? Well, no, not really. But, you know, I still believe in God. And I say to them, you know what? I bet you go to church. I bet you go to church because your pastor said, I'll give you $500 or $1,000 if you show up for church, and you'd be there lickety-split. I guarantee it. But not because God's there. It's because your real God is there. I don't know anybody who wouldn't do that. You know, you would. I would. I'd do it myself. You know? If I had to jog to church, I'd get there for $1,000, you know? It's all a matter of priorities. He says in verse 17, then they made their sons and their daughters pass through the fire and practice divination and enchantments and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking Him. They made their sons and daughters pass through the fire. You know, it's speculative on what that means. It may be a cultic practices like firewalkers, but I really believe what it's referring to is they offered their children up in the fire to these false gods. All right?
That's what mine says.
Yeah.
Because they sacrificed their sons and daughters
right.
in the fire.
Right. And, you know, today you don't throw your children into the arms of a flaming idol, but if you murder your children in the womb, well, that's sacrificing on the altar of what? Convenience or money or whatever. There's no difference. There's no difference in the sight of God. In verse 18, it says, so the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them from His sight. None was left except the tribe of Judah. So, you know, what's coming to this nation? We just feel like, hey, we're a superpower and nothing's going to happen to us and things are just going to continue to go on for the next million years. People really, they don't have a clue. Just read history and you will see it. You don't have to read your Bible, just read history. Verse 19 says, also Judah did not keep the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the customs which Israel had introduced. Even Judah began to, what, turn from God, the southern tribe. But you see that chart I got up there? You had 19 different kings in the northern kingdom. None of them were any good. And in 722 B.C., they were carried away in captivity. You know, God just said, that's it. That's closing time. You're finished. You're through. And He threw them out of the land. And in the southern kingdom, they lasted 100 years or so after them. And they were thrown out too. I guess the southern tribes said, well, you know, we got the temple down here and nothing's going to happen to us. But they started doing the same thing they did up north. And that God dealt with them. But He just dealt with them later. So it said, which verse did I leave off? Verse 20, it says, the Lord rejected all the descendants of Israel and afflicted them and gave them into the hands of plunderers. Look at our plunderers today. I don't care if it's the tax collectors, and I don't care if it's people just sucking off you as far as our social services. We're being plundered until He had cast them out of His sight. Verse 21 says, when He had torn Israel from the house of David, they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king. Then Jeroboam drove Israel away from following the Lord and made them commit a great sin. And the sons of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They did not depart from them until the Lord removed Israel from His sight and spoke through all of His servants and the prophets. So Israel was carried away into exile from their own land to Assyria until this day. In other words, it goes back to the beginning of where they made the mistake. It was under Jeroboam. He was the one. He was the first king of the northern kingdom. And he was chosen by God. God chose him. The prophet Ahijah, he's the one that they, you know, gave him, you know, a cloak that he tore into 12 pieces. It says, here, God's going to make you king over 10 tribes. But Jeroboam just figured, hey, man, I got to finagle this whole situation myself. And rather than trusting God, he just, for political reasons, set up two golden calves, one in Dan and one in Bethel, and told everybody in the northern kingdom, don't go down to Jerusalem. Hey, you can just worship here. God is everywhere, and so on and so forth. So he's the one that did this. And I'm telling you right now, these politicians today, they're going to have a lot to account for. They're going to have a lot to account for. A lot of them got dripping with blood. The blood of the unborn, they're just dripping with all kinds of sin because they're the ones who are promoting so much of the evil that's taking place in this country today, just like Jeroboam was responsible. They lay it at his feet because he's the one that took them off in the wrong direction. In verse 24, it says, the king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Cuthath and from Ava and from Hamath and from Sepharvaim and settled them in the cities of Samaria in place of the sons of Israel. So they possessed Samaria and lived in a city. So what he's saying here is that what happened is the king of Syria, when he went up north there and he incarcerated away all these people and exiled them, he brought in other people to fill the land because he just figured, I don't want to create a vacuum here. I'll bring in all these other people. And they'll work the land, and I'll still get a tribute or taxes or whatever. And verse 25 says, in the beginning of their living there, they did not fear the Lord. Therefore, the Lord sent lions among them, which killed some of them. So they spoke to the king of Assyria, saying, the nations whom you have carried away into the exile into the cities of Samaria do not know the customs of the God of the land. So he has sent lions among them, and behold, they killed them because they do not know the customs of the God of the land. Then the king of Assyria commanded, saying, take there one of the priests whom you carried away into exile and let him go and live there and let him teach them the custom of the God of the land. So one of the priests whom they had carried away into exile from Samaria came and lived at Bethel and taught them how they should fear the Lord. But every nation still made gods of its own and put them into the houses of the high places which the people of Samaria had made and every nation in their cities in which they lived. The men of Babylon made Succoth-Benoth and the men of Cuth made Negrol and the men of Hamath made Ashima, and the Avites made Nibhath, Haz, and Tarktak, and the Sepharites burned their children in the fire to Adrimelech and to Ahimelech, the gods of Sepharvaim. And they also feared the Lord and appointed from among themselves priests of the high places who acted for them in the houses of the high places. They feared the Lord, and they served their own gods according to the customs of the nations among whom they had been carried away into exile. To this day, they do according to their earlier customs. They do not fear the Lord, nor do they follow their statutes or their ordinances or the law or the commandments which the Lord commanded the sons of Jacob, whom he had named Israel, with whom the Lord made a covenant and commanded them, saying, you shall not fear other gods, nor bow down yourselves to them, nor serve them, nor sacrifice to them. But the Lord who brought you up from the land of Egypt with great power and with an outstretched arm, him you shall fear, and to him you shall bow yourself down, and to him you shall sacrifice. The statutes and the ordinances and the laws and the commandments which he wrote for you, you shall observe to do forever, and you shall not fear other gods. The covenant that I have made with you, you shall not forget, nor shall you fear other gods, but the Lord your God you shall fear. He will deliver you from the hand of all your enemies. However, they did not listen, but they did according to their earlier customs. So while these nations feared the Lord, they also served their idols, their children likewise, and their grandchildren, as their fathers did. So they do to this day. Now, what's it saying here? Because it's kind of interesting. He's saying here that what happened was a lot of these people were out of the land. And what happened there, too, is that this king of Syria, he came down there, he just pulverized these people, and he incarcerated away, you know, thousands upon thousands of them into exile. But some of the people he did leave behind were the poor and the illiterate and the uneducated and a lot of the people that would be unproductive. As far as the king was concerned, these people are a bunch of useless eaters. I don't want them coming into my land. You know, I just want people who are going to be productive. So what happened there? You had some of the Israelites that were left behind, and they started intermarrying with these other people that were brought down from the other places, and they became half-breeds. They became known as the Samaritans. They were the ones that ended up being despised during Jesus' day, because a full Jew despised the Samaritan. They look at the Samaritans as being dogs, and they didn't want to even talk to each other. Because as far as the full-blooded Jew was concerned, these people were sellouts. These people were half-breeds. And this is one of the reasons why they ended up worshiping God in their own way. Because this was carried over right down to when Jesus was walking the earth. Because remember what happened when Jesus was walking through Samaria and he came across the woman at the well? She was a Samaritan. Jesus said to him, "Hey, would you give me a drink of water?" And she was shocked. She was shocked. He said, "Well, you're a Jew. What are you doing talking to me?" You know, they didn't want to have anything to do with each other. There was just nothing but bad blood. Yet they both claimed to believe in the same God of heaven, right? So then they get in this dialogue, and then the woman says, "Well, you know, who's right? You Jews or us Samaritans? Because we worship over here on this Mount Gerizim, and you guys worship down there in Jerusalem." And Jesus set the record straight. He says, "Well, the Jews are right. They're worshiping where they're supposed to be worshiping, but there's coming a day when God is looking for those who will worship him in spirit and in truth. It's not going to matter the place. What's going to matter is, are you worshiping God in spirit? All right? In other words, his spirit, through his spirit, and are you worshiping him in truth? Because truth is all important. There's all kinds of people today who claim to believe in Jesus Christ. Look at a number of these cults today. They claim to believe in Jesus, but they're not worshiping him in spirit. I mean, and in truth, rather. You know, it's heresy. They're off base. So, in other words, we have to worship God, the one true God, in the right way, and worship him in spirit. In other words, you know, just don't give him lip service. But what's happened here is that these people that were put into the land, God just judged them too. And so what he brought a plague of lions against them. And they figured, hey, this is from God. The interesting thing, as ignorant as these people were, they could tell that what was happening to them with this plague of lions that was set against them, they said, you know what? This is God doing this to us. And this is the God of the land. And we're ticking him off. So they sent a messenger over to the king of Syria saying, hey, send one of the old priests down here to tell us about the God of the land. I give these people credit. You know why? Because look at the disasters that happened to this country over and over and over again. I don't care whether it's a plague of AIDS, and I don't care whether it's a tornado or a hurricane or whatever. Not too many people are going to stand up and say, you know what, this is the hand of God. Well, these people, you know, seen that, right? But then what happens? The priest goes down there and tells them about the God of the land. So then they try to do the two-step. Because how many times did you read right here? Didn't it seem a little bit contradictory? Because it said they feared the God of heaven, and then they said they didn't fear him, then they feared him, then they didn't fear him. So what is it saying? What it is, they acknowledge him. Right? But he's only one more God in the whole pantheon of gods. One of the things that just galls me to no end is when you see these politicians who are just an affront to God as far as what they stand for and what they promote and the laws that they push forward. And then they'll say something like, God bless you. Or they'll use God's name. And I'm just feeling like, don't use his name. Because all you're trying to do is promote yourself. I mean, to me, that's using his name in vain. And it's not being used to punctuate a sentence. It's being used to try to promote them. So in this country, we are contradictory, aren't we? We fear God, but we don't fear God. It's the same thing, right? So, you know, this is where we're at today. It's exactly where these people were at. But it's going to take a lot more than just simply giving God, you know, lip service or head acknowledgement. We have to obey him, because what true fear of the Lord is what? It's the beginning of wisdom. And there is no wisdom in this country anymore. We cannot make a wise decision. All these guys that are scrambling to become president, they all think they got the answer. To me, it's like they all want to be the captain of the Titanic, because it's going down. I mean, what's the point to that? It's going down. Unless we get some real wisdom, this country's had it. You know, it really has. Yeah, anybody have anyone to share after all that good news?